Welcome. Filmed in Canada is a fin-free podcast about Canadian movies. I'm William.
And I'm Alexander. And we're talking Twin Peaks, The Return.
This time it's personal.
No, I've just been watching Twin Peaks, The Return. But
have you? I haven't gotten around to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I have time, I should certainly want to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good to sit down with you again, Alexander. We're talking about Sharkwater.
Yes.
It's a documentary from 2006. Let me rephrase that as a statement. It is a documentary that came out in 2006.
Yes. Yep. Directed by Rob Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
Of my... Wait, is it still called your alma mater if it's your high school?
It's one of yours, isn't it? Isn't it one of your alma maters?
Yeah. So we both went to the same private high school in Toronto, Ontario.
No kidding.
Called Crescent School.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Rob Stewart was a photographer for Canadian Wildlife Federation magazines. And through his experience with his wildlife photography, he was exposed to conservation concerns. And on a trip to the Galapagos, he saw firsthand the destructive nature of longline fishing and how it was catching sharks in a very wasteful harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then he, I read he spent the next 4 years. He left his job and he spent 4 years to travel and make the documentary Sharkwater.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was his first of three documentaries that he made. The second was Revolution. And the third was Sharkwater Extinction.
Right.
Yeah, you saw Sharkwater Extinction.
Yes, we saw the premiere at the Vancouver International Film Festival, Chris and I. Yeah, and I guess worth mentioning that during the production of Sharkwater Extinction, he tragically passed away due to a complication surrounding a dive that they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in off of Florida, they were mm-hmm. diving. Yeah, so that was in early 2017, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that movie was completed by his family and colleagues.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then, like, the ultimate conclusion of what he was an advocate for, the protection of sharks, or maybe just the next step in what he was trying to fight for. Recently, the Canadian government passed a bill that amended the Fisheries Act. This is in June of 2019. So the Fisheries Act was amended to outlaw the trade of sharks of shark fins in Canada. The import and export of shark fins is banned in Canada.
Right.
The first of the G20 countries to do that. And also Canada was one of the first or second highest importer of shark fins outside of Asia.
Interesting.
Until now. So
that's so wild to me because it's like you're watching this documentary made by a Canadian 13 years ago, and like it genuinely just never would have occurred to me that Canada would have allowed the importation of shark fins because it just seems like such a blatantly obvious wrong thing to do.
Ethically wrong? I think there's certainly an argument for that. But
although I guess like it is a complex issue because like if you say that it's just black and white that shark finning is wrong, then you know why is it not black and white that factory farming is wrong?
It's the whole food chain issues, right? What is it, how do we determine what one thing we shouldn't do at all and another thing we do it at such a massive scale it's okay?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose one way we could draw a line is the fact that with like factory farming, you could say that product, that livestock product is created for that purpose.
Right.
Whereas sharks are harvested from the wild.
Right.
And
they're harvested from the wild for a relatively frivolous purpose.
Yeah.
Comparatively, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the only value, it seems, from what Rob was fighting against, the only value was their fins,
and so which offer some form of dubious medicinal qualities. And
yeah, that's very questionable. Yeah. Whether that can be proven, or that it should even be believed. And also that the sharks are. In their environment, at the top of the food chain,
right.
So they play a role in regulating other wildlife,
mm-hmm.
Which you could say, I guess we could argue chickens and pigs might not have that role in the environment. Right?
Only in the inverse way, I guess, in the sense of, I guess, predominantly cows producing methane,
mm-hmm.
producing yeah. greenhouse gases, or just the practice of farming. Producing a lot of greenhouse gases, using a lot of water, destroying a lot of land, like those kind of things.
Yeah. So anyway, but let's get back on task and talk about shark water.
Yes.
Yeah. So I only saw it recently. I was aware of the documentary and what it was about, but I just kind of never got around to it until we were going to talk about it for this podcast. Mm-hmm. You've seen it before?
Yeah, I saw it. I think around 2 years ago when Rob Stewart passed, Cineplex did kind of a limited screening run in various Canadian cities to commemorate his life.
Yeah. Okay.
So I saw it at that time.
Okay. So, but both of us then kind of in relatively recently, considering that it came out in 2006.
Right.
Yeah. And it's one of the better known Canadian documentaries as well.
Mm-hmm.
It garnered enough interest that people, I guess, petitioned the Canadian government to do something about it. And when they made that announcement about the update to the Fisheries Act, I think they did it at a Toronto location where there was a mural painted toward for Rob's in memory of Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that there's a very direct tie between what Rob Stewart what he brought to the public's attention and how that manifests as legislation in Canada. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm saying is it's a well-known documentary.
Yeah.
Even though we didn't get to it till now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to talk about how you reacted to the documentary and mm-hmm. whether it was new information. For me, of course, because I'm familiar with the dish, the shark's fin soup dish in Chinese restaurants.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm aware of the appetite for the product.
Right.
But I wasn't really aware of how it was harvested.
Right.
Right, and how wasteful it was.
Right.
And I didn't really think too much about... I didn't really question the market for it.
Right.
Right. I knew that it was a very expensive thing.
Right.
To obtain shark's fin. But I also knew that it was if you really looked at that dish, shark's fin soup, that it was more of a symbolic ingredient than
right.
actually one that added anything to the soup flavor.
Right.
So I was aware of that as well. So, yeah.
So it's not as if it's a stock made from the shark fin or?
My understanding is that it's nearly tasteless, the shark's fin, but the broth is made from, it could be made from seafood and chicken and,
right.
and other ingredients.
Okay. Interesting.
And so that, it's almost like a topping on
right.
top of this other broth.
It's bringing out your fancy china to entertain family members once a year or whatever. It's a symbolic thing. More than it is, it's a symbol that you can afford to purchase this dish, to offer this dish to your
yeah
to your friends and family.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
And probably, I bet outside of shark's fin soup, if you had the raw material cooked, of course, if you had shark's fin alongside with other ingredients, I bet you wouldn't be able to identify it in a taste test because
right.
it doesn't have I don't feel it has a really distinct flavor.
Mm.
So in the soup, you can recognize it and that someone's paid a lot of money for the dish.
Right.
So that seems to be its value in Chinese dining culture.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess in my case, I was sort of vaguely aware that it was a thing that was done in terms of shark finning. I didn't understand the way that it was done, or how pervasive of an issue it was, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I also certainly wasn't aware of kind of the broader ecological impacts of sharks in the ocean and kind of the role that they play. But I think the most revelatory thing for me in the movie is that sharks just aren't violent creatures, at least toward humans. And that's just so contrary to what the media presents. Like, anytime there's a shark attack, it's a huge news story heard around the world. And yet, you know, likely hundreds of thousands of more people are getting killed by, you know, vehicle accidents every year. Or and the quote that they use in the movie is that elephants kill more people than sharks do per year. But elephants are, you know, these majestic animals that kind of look cute or whatever, and they're considered to be really smart and gentle and docile when they're actually quite aggressive and the opposite of that. So it's just weird how, like, almost like the kindergarten version of how animals are presented to us becomes how we actually believe them to be in the real world as adults, and that plays into so much of kind of how the topic is treated.
Yeah, I think the movie goes to great lengths to make that point about how our popular conceptions of sharks is wrong.
Yeah.
And I think it wins the argument when it shows Rob and his team, and like they're just diving in these waters where it's densely populated with sharks, but they seem completely docile.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, he's like hugging one of them.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really stunning footage mm-hmm. that they appear to be in no danger at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I remember like watching nature shows on TV where there would always be like a shark cage, right? And then mm-hmm. they'd be attacked by a great white shark.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, thinking about it now, of course they would have done something to attract the sharks and irritate them enough to get that footage, right?
Yeah.
Because it seems like the experts say great white sharks are pretty shy; they wouldn't approach people.
Yeah.
Normally, so
yeah.
Yeah.
And even hearing someone's heartbeat sends them away.
Yeah, that's interesting information about. I think they're talking about hammerhead sharks at that mm-hmm. point. Yeah. So I want to talk about this, some of the science behind the film then, because I haven't done any research. I'm just talking about my reaction to it.
Right.
There are bits like that where Rob talks about he needs to calm himself when he's in the water, otherwise the sharks would be scared away.
Mm-hmm.
Which speaks to like how really finely tuned their senses are, right? Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is kind of stated matter-of-factly, and like I don't think there's really time in the documentary to like give a scientific explanation about how these things work, biological
right.
explanations, right?
Right, right, right.
So we take it for granted that what he's telling us is straight,
mm-hmm.
right? And we haven't and if it's information that we haven't heard before, I think it is quite quite eye-opening.
Right.
There's all those like shark experts, marine biologists who talk about the stats of, mm-hmm. and shark behavior. I think that's useful too. I'm willing to accept like what they tell us about how sharks behave, because otherwise I can't really fathom people getting into the water with them if they don't understand how these creatures behave. Right.
Right.
Yeah. When they have the numbers though about how huge the illegal shark finning harvest is, that kind of just boggles the mind, and it does make me scratch my head a little bit, because like for example on the Sharkwater website, they say that in a year 100 million sharks are killed for shark's fins.
Right. And that number's come up since 2006 when they made the movie. They make the point in Sharkwater Extinction that the issue is getting worse, not better.
Well, that's the thing is, if it's so bad, like, how can it be sustained? Right. Are sharks? Because also they say that sharks take a long time for their
25 years to reach sexual maturity. Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't seem like they could naturally keep up if they're being eliminated that quickly.
Right.
So something like, you're a math guy, right?
Yeah.
So you, if you do the math, it means it seems like the oceans would be overpopulated with the sharks.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess like. It's a good point that you know, you'd want to see where that number's coming from, yeah. how they're either accurately counting that number or doing their best estimate. I would be curious to kind of see where that number comes from. But you'd also need to understand how many sharks there are in the ocean. Like, I mean, the other point that they make in the documentary is that that Earth is 80% water, and so there is a lot of space for them to be. So it could be that there's billions and billions of sharks. I don't know, but 100 million a year does seem like a lot.
Yeah,
for it to also, not already be completely decimated.
Yeah. Also, when I saw the press release about the Canadian Fisheries Act amendment, so further down in that press release, they cited that. And so this was from the Reuters news service. So their number was 73 million sharks killed every year.
Right.
So now, you know, it just gets abstract when we're into these numbers. But between 73 and 100 million is actually quite a big gap.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's a third.
And at the conclusion of the movie, there's a title that comes up that says, in the time that you've been sitting here watching the movie, which is like 100 minutes or something, right? In that time, 15,000 sharks have been killed.
Right.
Again, that is something that just boggles the mind. And on one level, I gasp and say like, oh my God, that's terrible. But on another level, my mind just doesn't quite accept it. It's such a huge number.
Yeah. So I just did a quick Google search. I searched what is the total shark population, and all of the results are saying that 100 million get killed every year.
Right.
So,
at some point that statement was made, that number was established, and it just gets picked up in all the other places where, they put in shark stats, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I do question whether, what the source of that was.
Yeah.
Not exactly to challenge it, but to understand it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the documentary certainly doesn't get into that sort of minutia. Yeah. And it does sort of take a lot of those things as fact. But at the same time, I mean, unless it's just an outright blatant lie, I don't know that for what the movie's trying to do, it needs to get into that minutia. I feel like it's much more about kind of creating a travelogue in a sense, but this very dangerous travelogue of them kind of doing their best to kind of infiltrate these areas and expose these practices and create a sense of how dangerous this whole criminal underworld is and how pervasive the issue is and you know, the governmental intervention that's going on to actually prevent Rob Stewart and his team from stopping the problem. They're alluding to the Costa Rican government getting paid off to continue allowing the shark finning to go on. Like,
well, yeah,
I think those political issues are more important to the message that's being delivered.
Right. Okay. I mean, this is a movie that is, it wants to get a certain message out.
Mm-hmm.
Which is how destructive this practice is, and you know, let's save the sharks, right? But to get there, it's presented as a personal journey of Rob Stewart, right? So it's about him gathering this information. He goes along with Paul Watson and the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society when they go there. They're asked to go to the Galapagos. Right?
Yeah,
yeah. It's following Rob's journey, which I think it's a fair way to present the information. And I also think it's a valid criticism that it kind of becomes a lot more about Rob than about the issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, did you like that it was so focused on Rob, or did you mind that it was so focused on Rob?
I think that works for what they're trying to accomplish, because it's creating this idea of him as this person that wants to you know, protect these fish populations and do good work, and the challenges that he sort of comes up against, and like that you're more invested in what's going on, because it's like they're putting themselves in really different dangerous situations.
Well, if it was Rob the documentarian following Sea Shepherd Society.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that could be there's a movie there, right?
Right.
I mean, he could capture that information, as a witness to it.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that'd be fine. But there's another camera who's capturing that information.
Right. Right?
So there's a deliberate sense of, this is Rob discovering all this, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I think because it was his first movie, and he was clearly passionate about this issue. I think he was deliberately trying to establish Rob Stewart as an ambassador to this cause, right?
Yeah.
So it's meant to make him recognizable. He's on the poster.
Yeah.
He's he appears in the movie because I think looking forward at that time, they were going to say, you know, this is the face of saving the sharks.
Right. Yeah. It serves the purpose of getting his name and his face out there. I think Sharkwater Extinction, even though we're not necessarily focusing on that, I think it does a better job of putting him in front of the camera, because it comes across more as almost like a YouTube vlog. Like he's kind of engaging with the camera in a different way, and it's more it's more of a kind of fly on the wall camera, as opposed to the feeling of there being someone behind the camera filming him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it did feel more of like a kind of social media age version of a similar movie.
Hmm.
with Sharkwater Extinction, and I do think it's more successful. I think the filmmaking is stronger in that movie.
Okay.
There are a few segments in this movie that I think are really effective on just kind of a filmmaking level, though, that I'd want to talk about as well.
Hmm.
Which are there's various montages throughout, and I think they just have really smart music choices in those montages. The first one being there's like the shark attack kind of media frenzy footage to get across the message of, you know, this is how the media sees sharks, but this is what they're really like. And there's this kind of driving, pulsing rock music under it. And it's like, yeah, like it's kind of like that Shark Week mentality of this is this really exciting, dangerous thing. And it just, it puts you in that mindset of like, these are dangerous creatures that are out to get us, kind of thing. And I thought that was effective. There's the Nina Simone song, I forget what it's called, but like, you know, like Where Are You Gonna Run To, that one.
Oh, okay.
Dun, 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 dun. You know that one? You know what I'm talking about?
Mm.
When they're like running away from the Coast Guard, that song comes on, and I thought that was a really good kind of, again, like propulsive moment, and feels like this kind of like almost like a heist movie in a sense, like that they're getting away, they're on the hunt, it elicited this level of excitement in me that, you know, you're invested in them wanting to get away, and it for a moment doesn't feel like this real thing that's happening. It feels like a movie moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one was, there's a montage of all the sharks being killed and just kind of tossed back into the water. And, it's very kind of shocking, just depressing footage that you're watching. And there's this kind of very peaceful, acoustic guitar African song underneath it, and just the juxtaposition of that music and the images that you're seeing, I thought was also really effective.
Okay. I thought the sequence where the Sea Shepherd confronted that fishing boat,
mm-hmm.
and was trying to, I guess, effectively doing a citizen's arrest, mm-hmm. On the high seas, I thought that was very tense. I thought that was an exciting sequence.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Just because you saw a lot of like the mechanical work that goes into like having to have a boat challenge another boat, you know. So I thought it was interesting in terms of like what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the movie, because it's so Rob-centric sometimes, I think it makes a mistake where it spends too much time with him in the hospital.
Right.
Because it really sets the focus of the movie suddenly on Rob's plight rather than like what's happening with the crew.
Right.
And that's just, you know, that's just like a storytelling decision that I think is maybe not the appropriate one at that time.
Yeah, that's interesting because I feel the opposite. I think that it shows that like he's so devoted to this cause,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, he's willing to risk his medical safety in order to at least stay close to the action and then just get right back into it once this infection has gone away.
What choice does he have?
Well, I mean, his choice is to just give up and
to fly home.
Yeah.
Was that a choice?
I think so. Yeah.
I thought you couldn't move.
Well, no, like they were saying, there was a phone call that he had with presumably someone in his family where, mm-hmm. it seemed like they were suggesting that he go back to Toronto, and his comment was that I'm safer here than I am in Toronto, or like I'm more likely to get to hurt myself in Toronto than I am here, kind of thing, something like that.
Well, I think he's trying to reassure them that he's going to be okay.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I can totally see what you're saying. I think that a big part of my enjoyment of the movie is seeing someone put their life on the line for something that they're extremely passionate about,
mm-hmm.
and like want to see change in the world. Mm-hmm. Like I think that is a powerful message, and it'd be lost if he was just behind the camera observing these other people, kind of thing. Although maybe not exactly, but I really connect to that aspect of the movie. So it doesn't distract from other elements. It is part of it for me, I guess.
Okay, yeah. Right. There's one element of this issue that I wish the movie had tackled more directly, and that's the whole like the shark's fin suit and what it means to Asian cultures, especially Chinese cultures, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like you see the marketplace. It looks like it's Hong Kong or somewhere where, mm-hmm. Someone has a giant shark's fin on their wall, and
mm-hmm.
and there's that guy who's an advocate for continuing the
saying that sharks don't get cancer or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, he's a promoter of, mm-hmm. You know, buy shark's fin and make your soup. So I mean, that guy comes off as like as a weasel, right?
Yeah, but he's not really like, I don't even think they put his name on screen. Maybe that's by his request. I don't know.
I don't remember. I thought he had a title like of what organization he's with.
Oh, okay. Maybe I missed that. Yeah. But
I mean, he just fits that role for the needs of the movie. You need someone slimy to present this other side of the argument,
mm-hmm.
and then you move on. But mm-hmm. I wish they would have like really tackled why there's a demand for this product,
mm-hmm.
and. I bring that up because I observed in Vancouver when I don't know how long ago it was, but there was a city councillor who wanted to ban shark's fin soup in the city,
mm-hmm.
and his tact was, I'm going to talk to the restaurant owners, and I'm going to talk to council members in other municipalities and try to like get more people on board to stop serving shark's fin soup.
Right.
Right. But it wasn't directed at the community to like change their minds about why they needed sharks and soup.
Right.
So I thought it was just like, it was this approach that was actually a little bit distant from actually the issue.
Right.
And so, Sharkwater, the documentary, I mean, it's about the finning practice and how destructive it is, but it doesn't get to like, why is there a demand for it? We should change people's minds about the demand.
Right.
Right. And so,
actually get into more about like show proof of some scientific study that shows that the medicinal qualities that people think that they're getting are not there, as opposed to just saying it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Actually developing that.
Well, I guess it's like, who is this movie made for? I think it's made for people who would be, I think it's made for Western audiences, mm-hmm. who would be impressed that this young guy has taken on this passion project. Mm-hmm. I'm going to donate money to the cause, or I'm going to buy a T-shirt, or I'm going to also take a stand against it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't talk to the audience that would reconsider their purchasing choices,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a fault of. Shortcoming. I think
it does. To a certain extent, it doesn't address why, it maybe doesn't fully address why it's sort of unnecessary to do in the first place, but it does address that if you are considering doing this, here are the reasons why you shouldn't, because it's really destructive to the environment. These medicinal qualities. So it doesn't get into that aspect, but ultimately, just the fact that it's really ecologically destructive, I think, is a strong enough argument that comes through to anyone who would see this potentially. Although I mean, there's the talking head in the documentary that says it's you know, we're all here for a short amount of time.
Sure.
Who cares, kind of thing.
Yeah. But that message, I think, of making a better choice, I guess, I think it's a little bit undercut when they give you these stats, like they harvest 100 million sharks a year.
Yeah.
Right. And you're just like, wow. And apparently it doesn't change anything
mm-hmm.
from where I'm sitting, right? Which mm-hmm. I know that's an ignorant position to take, because I'm not, I don't live in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it affects us in other ways. But mm-hmm. sitting here in this room or ordering a meal in a restaurant, that thought of last year 100 million sharks were killed, it doesn't really make a difference to your everyday.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm not sure if I'm making much sense, but I guess... I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know what might be a more effective argument to change people's behavior. Cold numbers or something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So just numbers-wise, mm-hmm. it occurs to me that we can put this in context to some extent. There's close to 8 billion humans on the planet
mm.
that are taking up, 30% of the land on Earth? Like, what do you think? In terms of just like surface area of land, how much area do you think humans actually occupy?
So like, we're considering of the total land, and then you have like the high mountains, which are uninhabitable, deserts are uninhabitable.
Say there's 8 billion people covering about 30% of the land.
Okay. I think I'd buy that, sure.
Yeah. So that's only...
maybe it's a little bit low. Maybe it's, you know.
So that's only like 6% of the Earth's surface.
Okay.
Whereas sharks are the top predator in an area of the Earth that covers 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think that they would number far more than. I guess like the top predators don't necessarily need to number in that. They don't need to be that great in number. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess...
It would certainly be in the billions, though, I would think.
Yeah. Are they in every ocean environment, though? Are they in the Arctic? Are they just in like warm water environments?
I would think... What were the larger ones?
Nurse shark or the whale shark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think they would probably swim in Arctic water.
No.
But yeah, more likely...
Yeah.
Closer to the equator.
I can only speak to like my own, the way I process information, especially from documentaries and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I respond to visuals, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing Rob in the water, in waters that seem like they're like some sort of an ocean paradise, and it's just densely populated with sharks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all of that. Those are beautiful images. And, you know, that is something that registers for me, is when I see that and then to think like all of this is disrupted by very greedy, fishing behavior, illegal fishing, by poaching, right, by wasteful harvesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, to me, is very disturbing, and that would, for me, that's a compelling argument to take a position against this practice.
Mm-hmm.
The movie does have an effect on me, even though I say that it has some shortcomings in terms of how it presents its argument.
Right.
Yeah. And I think as a photographer, that's, I think Rob probably had that as his skill set, is that he can capture
these visual impact
in beautiful environments. Right?
Yeah.
And because even after like the episode with the sea shepherd, he still wants to keep going. He has to like travel to, is it the Caicos or?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Like he wants to go to this habitat to get footage, even though along the way he's gotten a lot of footage, but he still wants to get that.
That's part of shark water extinction as well. Like mm-hmm. he's constantly balancing this political message with just, here's some really beautiful footage, because like that's what I want to do. I want to show that these creatures are beautiful and deserving of a different place in how we think of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would we compare this movie to?
I guess I would think of other like activist type documentaries.
Yeah.
You haven't seen The Cove, have you?
No.
No. Okay. It comes to mind as something similar, but what about something like An Inconvenient Truth?
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Because both are, they present their message sort of very much in the immediate moment and say we have to take action.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And one is very deliberately, here's some information and this is how you get involved. And the other one, the Inconvenient Truth is,
yeah,
it's a PowerPoint slide. And this one is a little bit more,
on the ground.
Artful.
Yeah. I think An Inconvenient Truth, like it presents an issue that requires a lot of political engagement, but also can be dealt with in certain small ways on an individual level.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this shark finning problem, like that, there's not really much you can do as an individual other than to decide, okay, I'm never going to eat shark fin soup.
Mm-hmm.
In a way it feels like a more complex issue, even though climate change is obviously a much more drastic problem
mm-hmm.
that the world needs to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I have a positive opinion about An Inconvenient Truth as well.
Yeah.
Right. I think I would set shark water at An Inconvenient Truth -3.
Okay. I'm going to say Inconvenient Truth +2. So there you go.
Yeah.
Who would win in a fight? Sharks or man bear pig?
Sorry, who?
Man bear pig.
Man bear pig?
Yeah. That was South Park's spoof of Inconvenient Truth.
Really?
Al Gore was pushing this idea that this creature named Man Bear Pig was going to take over the world as opposed to climate change.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's how you get the message across, is you gotta construct some kind of boogeyman for people to get upset about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we know that sharks are not aggressive, so I guess.
Yeah, if sharks were causing climate change, it'd be a lot easier to deal with, because people would rally behind that, no problem.
Right, and then we'd have more sharknados to deal with.
Right.
Did you like it when they used baby shark, 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 baby shark, shark, shark in that part of the movie?
I don't have a child, so I haven't had
maybe,
to
maybe it wasn't
have
in the movie.
That song drilled into my mind. Yet.
Maybe it wasn't in the movie. It was just in the background. All right. Well, thanks for talking about shark water, Alexander.
You are very welcome.
Let's do this again soon.
Yes, sir.